Oh, thank you so much for joining us today. We just want to hear some of your thoughts on issues for us in the beef industry and start out with sustainability. Give us some of your thoughts and really how that fits in with the cattle industry.
Jennifer, you don't want to comment on my tie first?
Well, I do like your tie, but I thought we'd cover that backstage. If you can't see, it's a cow and a calf. Beautiful tie. He knows how to play to his audience.
I know where I am. Sustainability. A lot of people talk about sustainability. I was just in Europe last week, and that's their big thing, is sustainability. And we probably ask these people out here across America, we probably get a different definition everywhere. I define sustainability this way. Certainly there's environmental sustainability. We're talking to a group of people out here that are conservationists. They're not going to poison their land in order because they make their livelihood off their land. They're environmentalists, frankly, and environmental sustainability is very important. Social sustainability, what we are compelled morally, I think, to do is provide available, accessible, affordable food for mankind. And these folks do a good job at that. But you're not going to do those two types of sustainability if you don't have economic sustainability as well. And people got to make a living. I mean, we love farming. We love ranching. We love growing and producing stuff. But we still got to feed the kiddies, right?
We
got to make a living. So that's the way I look at sustainability. And that was a message in Europe. If you constrain your growers to a certain point where they cannot use modern techniques of modern farming, biotechnology, new breeding techniques, those kind of things, then you're going to choke them off from being uncompetitive worldwide, and then you have to build walls to keep us out. And from a protectionist standpoint, because in the United States, we have demonstrated that productivity is the real key for economic, environmental, and social sustainability. And these folks out here, along with their colleagues all across the country, we have increased agricultural production 400% over the last 90 years with 10% less land and doing it with a less price than we ever had 50 years ago on food supply.
Absolutely. We've got a great story to tell. Absolutely. Well, tell us a little bit about some of the trade wins we've had and their value to the cattle industry.
I bet you already know about those.
We've talked about them a couple of times.
Well, obviously, you know, the last two, obviously, signings just recently we'll talk about. But really from the beef cattle industry, Japan's a big deal. They are a huge consumer and a huge lover of our U.S. beef. And getting that Japan deal done, you know, we kind of gasped when the president said, TPP is bad. We sort of said, oh, no. And then we were wondering if he was going to validate that, and he has. What we've done with Japan, obviously, is open that market up again in a bilateral relationship. We've got a designated quota there that is not going to be subject to that higher tariff. We're going to be treated like other beef producers. And when we're treated equally, these folks out here, can win. And that's all we want, is that access to the market. That's what happened in Japan. Obviously, you know that we were excited about getting beef back into China in the summer of 17 for the first time in about 13 years. Then it kind of got caught up into all the spitting and spatting about the trade disruptions there. But I think we'll see that market grow with the Phase 1 agreement there. And I think the big deal there, you and I talked about it, it's an enforceable deal. They're big numbers they have to meet in an enforceable, unilaterally enforceable way. But the big deal is we got those non-tariff barriers on beef removed, the age restriction, and the maximum residue levels restricted of veterinary drugs. So that's a big deal there in Phase 1. And then, again, having the certainty with our closest neighbors and allies, Mexico and Canada, and certainly from the dairy sector as well in Canada. But overall, we know that these are huge consumers of U.S. beef as well. So all three of those combined. Then I was talking to Ambassador Lighthizer. Actually, we did a podcast. I hope you listened, called Sunny Side of the Farm.
Okay.
Where we talked about the trade deals there. And Lighthizer just kind of clicked off one after the other what he calls singles and doubles. It's not just Canada, Mexico, China, Japan. There are numerous trade deals out there that have been clicked off that don't get as much press that will cumulatively will add. And I think, frankly, we need to do that because I'm one that said I felt like we got too dependent on the Chinese market in many ways, more so in crops and beans and beef. But when you lose a big market like that, we want to have it spread out where we can feed the world.
Absolutely. Well, tell us, what do you think is your outlook for our industry as we come into 2020?
Farming's never a piece of cake. We know, these folks out here know, it's always going to be a challenge, but we deal with pretty resilient people as well. I mean, they've lived through it. Their cattle, obviously, subject to cycles, and we'll continue to see that. We're hopeful. Numbers are down a little bit, which we hope will mean good for prices. We think the demand being driven by these deals from Japan and China will help to grow demand internationally. Our domestic demand's really strong, really strong. Obviously, some of that demand we're concerned, the Labor Day perfect storm issue with the Colcomb fire, that much of that was driven by that retail Labor Day demand of people trying to cover that, which raised wholesale prices. But then because of the processing threat, it got lowered the cattle, the hoof price. And we're obviously looking into that and want to make sure that people playing fair and being treated fair in that regard. But I think, I'm bullish on agriculture generally. Knowing how much I like that big juicy ribeye, I'm bullish on the cattle industry too.
Oh, thank you. Absolutely. Share with us some of the challenges that you see coming for the beef industry, and how should we prepare for those as you've traveled the world as well as the U.S. over the last few years?
Here's what I don't think we've done very well. American agriculture is a miracle. Over the basic research, the applied research, extension service, that's what my message in Europe is. We have productively... In fact, let me share some statistics with you, then I'll tell you what I think we need to do. I had our economists compare what American families spend on food versus other developed countries. Let me just take one. France, we would acknowledge, France is a pretty developed country. They got some good farmers. But their food cost per family is about 13% of their disposable budget. In the United States, the food at home we spend is about 6% of our disposable budget. You take that over 330 million Americans, you know what that adds up to? $830 billion. Now, a lot of America and a lot of conservatives like to talk about all the things that government gives to farmers. That's what I'm talking about. American farmer rancher gives back to American consumers, $830 billion compared to France. That's the story we ought to be proud to tell. We ought to be able to proud to tell our environmental story, our sustainability story, because productivity means a smaller, lower footprint environmentally. It means we're making progress on greenhouse gas emissions. It's really a minor part. We get, we talk about farmers punching above their political weight. We get blamed for a lot more environmental issues than we cause, and that's out there. So we've got to get out of the farm gate. You know how farmers are. We just like to sit behind the farm gate, do what we do best, and not talk about it in town. It's private. It's not anybody's business. We gotta talk about it. We gotta have advocates like these three guys up here all across. We gotta get out here and tell the story that we don't have anything to be ashamed about the most affordable, healthy, wholesome food supply in the world, and that's what we need to be out here talking about. That's what we have not done well that we got to get out there and do, and your organization's the one that can tell it well.
All right, that's a challenge for all of you, and you heard the good story. One thing there's talked about a lot as I travel out is fake meat. What are your thoughts on the future of these products?
Well, again, we don't know exactly. We have one fast food chain kind of really hyping it. I haven't seen a big difference that way. I've tried some of it, and I know what my preference is. I'll take a good old juicy beef burger any day in the week, but and a steak.
Yeah, that's good.
There again, consumers will drive the ultimate decision, but we don't have anything to fear. Again, we don't have anything to fear. You have some people that will make choices both on their ethical feelings or their animal welfare feelings. Those folks have always been with us. They're not really using your product now anyway. So I don't think you got a lot to worry about that. I think we just got to continue to do what we ought to do and what we know how to do best. That's good, strong environmental control. We've got to control the product. I think we need to develop a circular system. You know, our cows produce products that's good for a circular environmental system of fertilizer and those kind of things. We've got to figure out how to handle that better and do that. So I don't think we have any threat of any kind of either protein-based or cell-based meat coming in. It's gotten a lot of interest in Silicon Valley and Hollywood, but I don't think you're going to see those kind of products on every table out here. You're going to have I'm a carnivore, so I'm going to continue to be a carnivore, and I think many Americans are as well.
Yeah, thank goodness they are. Yeah. Any other thoughts you want to share with this audience while you're here with us?
Well, again, I really do want to go back to the message that I think. I know I have a megaphone, but I'm going to start using that megaphone talking about what the productivity of American agriculture has meant to the American consumer. You know that the president's concerned about our trade deficit. Why do we have an $800 billion trade deficit? Because American farmers and ranchers have made food so affordable, so we've taken it for granted, they can spend that $800 billion on trinkets from elsewhere. And that's kind of what happened. We've created an affluency in here because we do not have a problem with food in America. And we haven't had for a long time. And we've got an awesome responsibility. We talked about that social responsibility. 9.8, 10 billion people coming in just a few short years there. We've got an awesome responsibility, a moral responsibility to provide the food, fiber, fuel for the world here. We're going to do it with modern technology. I think there are issues that we are working within the White House right now over new breeding techniques.
Yes, sir.
To, again, get us some clarity about using the kind of science that we know based on sound science, using all those tools of new breeding techniques as well as other kind of biotechnology tools that make for a good, safe, wholesome product where we can fulfill that social obligation, not only for Americans, but for the world, of a safe, wholesome, affordable, available food supply.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much,
Jennifer,
for visiting with us today and sharing your thoughts.
Proud.
Again,
thank
you to Secretary Perdue.
Thank you.
Bye.